From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Is Seattle a funny place? A new comic novel by a TV writer transplant from L.A. takes aim at the Emerald City, with its coffee shops and mountains, Microsoft zillionaires and pushy moms, and streams of Canadians. The book is getting rave reviews for its grumpy, funny rants as much as its madcap story. We thought we'd have some affectionate fun with Seattle today and learn a bit, too. This hour on Point, what's the real Seattle blend? And how has it changed over the years? We're settling in on Seattle. You can join the conversation. Seattleites, talk to us. How do you see your city? And for listeners across the country, how do you see Seattle today? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We've got a great Seattle crew with us today from the studios of KUOW in Seattle. And later we'll be joined by syndicated sex columnist and Seattle guy, Dan Savage. I'm telling you, we've got it all. So let's go from Seattle. Maria Simple joins us, former TV writer for Ellen, Mad About You, Arrested Development. She moved to Seattle from L.A. in 2008. Her funny new book, Rants and All, is getting raves. It's called Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Lev Grossman in Time Magazine says, think the Royal Tenenbaums in Seattle. Jonathan Franzen says, I tore through this book with heedless pleasure. And for him, that's just outright crazy talk, ripping. Maria Simple, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us in Seattle is Knut Berger, Seattle native, columnist, editor-at-large at Seattle Magazine. He writes the Mossback column for Crosscut.com, author of Space Needle, The Spirit of Seattle, and Pugetopolis, a Mossback takes on growth addicts, weather wimps, and the myth of Seattle nice. Knut, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from KUOW is John Stone, executive director of the Bumbershoot Festival, Seattle's big annual music and arts blowout, now in its 42nd year. John Stone, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Maria, you are the straw stirring the drink here, griping and ranting about Seattle in Where'd You Go, Bernadette? You call it this Canada Close sinkhole they call the Emerald City. Now, we know you've gotten all mushy in years since, but you came up from L.A., and what hit you?
I moved here quite randomly. We decided to move out of Los Angeles because we wanted a better place to raise our daughter. And we moved up here really knowing nobody. And I was really fully expecting to love the city the first time I came up here. I fell in love with it just probably because I was staying in a really nice hotel. Maybe that informed a lot more of what I thought about this city. Exactly. And it seemed like, oh, this seems like a nice enough place. And we moved up here knowing nobody. To the extent that just recently I looked at my daughter's school registration and our, in case of emergency contact, still is listed as our realtor at the time because we knew absolutely nobody okay. here. And I was so kind of struck by that I felt that people, I felt there was a coldness that I encountered, which I really wasn't used to because I'd come from a place where I had millions of friends and a very, very social life. And I just thought that I would jump into Seattle and just pick up where I left off in Los Angeles. And I found that people here are not that funny.
Or friendly or both. I mean, you call it the Seattle freeze. I hadn't heard that before. I'm not sure what it means.
I think the Seattle freeze is something that people talk about a lot here, which is that people are friendly enough when you first meet them. And then when it gets the next part of the conversation, which is let's get together, that part doesn't happen. Or if it does say let's get together, if one does say that, it just doesn't materialize. And so you find yourself having these interactions with people and you think, oh, I like them, they'll be my friend, and then you never hear from them again. And it's kind of disconcerting. And I think it is something that's real up here in Seattle. People talk about it. And in fact, I didn't really know about it at the time when I first moved up here. And now that I've kind of understand that it's a thing, it makes me feel less crazy about how disconnected I felt when I first moved up here.
I mean, we'll ask our native Seattleites about this, but you go after their town on so many angles here. I mean, Microsoft is Big Brother looming out there. You go after the architecture of the houses, craftsman-style houses everywhere until you're just sick of craftsman style. You go after the PC attitude. You go after hairdos. You say there's only two hairstyles, short gray hair and long gray hair. Man, your shotgun was in all directions, Maria.
It certainly is. You know, I moved up here and I looked around and I thought, who are you people and why don't you dye your hair? You know, I just didn't understand who these people were. You know, I come from Los Angeles where I recognized anybody in a Starbucks. I could probably tell you who they were. You know, they were out of screenwriters. They were wives of agents. And up here, I just felt no real connection. And so when I was in a very bad place because of moving up here, I wasn't writing anymore. And all I was doing was driving around pretty unsuccessfully, I might say, not being able to get from point A to point B, which was really the main source of my chagrin because the streets are so complicated. I started to kind of refine these rants in my head, and I was just felt like very paralyzed artistically. But luckily, the comedy writer in me recognized that it was kind of funny for someone who has a lot of personal problems and then blames the city for her personal problems. And okay. I thought, wow, I think there's a character there. So I really exaggerated for effect, I might say. And luckily, I was just in this very the kind of powerful, toxic mind frame, and I was able to put all this stuff in writing quickly.
Well, it is definitely funny. I want to hear, begin to hear what our Seattleites think of it. We'll dig on into your characterizations, but John Knute, I'll come to you first. I mean, what's it feel like to have this California transplant come up, you know, pick up the megaphone of the publishing world and start just teeing off on your fine city?
Oh, well, I thought it was really fun. You know, I go on my own rants and tirades from time to time. Yeah, there's plenty to be irritated about in Seattle. And of course, some of that I think is good. You know, it's a way that we make newcomers kind of earn their place. It's like we lay cultural tripwires for them to stumble over. The Seattle Freeze is a great example. It is real. You know, a good neighbor is one you don't have to talk to for 20 years.
What's that about? Maria wonders if it's about all the Norwegians in Seattle. Now, I don't know, from Garrison Keillor, we thought Norwegians, yeah, were a little reticent, but they sat around at the church and talked or somewhere.
Well, that's the folks back in Minneapolis,
right.
You know. They're social.
Jonathan
Rabin, the British writer who lives here in Seattle, once said that Seattle was the only major city people moved to be closer to nature. Kind of by definition, that's not about being around other people.
Yeah.
So there's both among the natives but also the immigrants, there's I think a lot we tend to attract people who are you know, socially challenged in some way or the other.
and then the immigrants have to deal with it. I look at that.
That's right.
John Stone, I mean, here we are, and I wonder how you're taking it on board. What about the PC element here? Maria, again, coming from California, I don't know, glass houses and all the rest, but she goes after Seattle. She's got a fictional report card for the girl who's at the heart of her story. Right at the front of the book, she's got the mission statement first of the school. Gaylor Street School is a place where compassion, academics, and global connectitude join together to create civic-minded citizens of a sustainable and diverse planet. And then the key to grades in this school is S, surpasses excellence, A, achieves excellence, W, working towards excellence. We're all above average here. Is that Seattle, John?
I think Maria hits the nail square on the head there, to tell you the truth. Yeah, I laughed when I read that bit. I laughed out loud. Yeah, that sounds like us. And I can understand how that can be confounding at first. I think, Maria, you come to Seattle at a really interesting time. In that so much is in flux culturally, socially. If I came to town in the last 10 years, I'd kind of wonder what the heck was going on up here as well.
Why so much flux right now, John? Is it Microsoft's stumble in a way in the world's eyes? I mean, it's still huge, it's still powerful, but you see the headlines about Microsoft in trouble. She's got Big Brother, everybody working there.
Is Microsoft's little soft patch here or more part of that flux or something else, John?
Oh, no. I think it's going in the other direction. What's happening here is remarkable in terms of convergence of economic drivers, really. I mean, for so much of Seattle's history, it was a one-industry town. It was a lumber town or it was an aerospace town. Mm-hmm. Then it was a software town. But right now, it's just there's so much happening. Biotech, medical science, you know, software, the internet, music, arts and culture, all these industries are converging and succeeding in just amazing ways all at once.
So maybe busting out of that Big Brother, silo there. Maria Semple's new book is Where'd You Go, Bernadette? You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org, and it's got a lot of people thinking and talking about Seattle. She rants on it, says in the end she's got a lot of affection. We'll look at that. Knut Berger is with us from Seattle Magazine. John Stone from Bumbershoot, the big arts festival. Lots of Seattle-based hip-hop coming out now. Here's Blue Scholars, North by Northwest. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Yeah. Two scholars rock fresh, North by Northwest, and it's still no rest, cause we're not finished yet. We're broke but not broken, cold but not frozen, lost but not forgotten, we're kicking the doors open. Two scholars rock fresh, North by Northwest, and it's still no rest, cause we're not finished yet. We're broke but not broken, cold but not frozen, moving in slow motion.
It's that Northwest classic.
And they say desegregation was a big step forward, but integration only covered up a rotten core. The surface might have changed, but the cauldron is still hot. Now we more politically correct with less real talk. They
say I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about the culture and foibles of Seattle, the Emerald City, Oz, capital of the Great Northwest, and target of some tough, funny jibes in the new comic novel by Maria Semple, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Maria Semple joins us today, along with Knut Berger of Seattle Magazine and John Stone, executive director of the Bumbershoot Music and Arts Festival. Lots of folks know Seattle, or think they do, from NBC's Frasier, ran from 93 to 04, set in Seattle. Here's a little scene where Dr. Frasier Crane, played by Kelsey Grammer, tries to order a large coffee, you know, Seattle coffee, in an unfamiliar coffee shop. You hear the barista first, then Frasier.
I'm afraid we don't have large, sir. We have piccolo, macho, mucho, and mucho macho.
I see. Do you happen to know what size would correspond to a nervosa grande?
No, but our mucho is about the same as the semi-colossal over at Don't Spill the Beans.
Ah, all right. I know that their colossal is comparable to a nervosa grande, so the semi-colossal would be 3/4 of a colossal. So the mucho and the semi-colossal would be equivalent. So I should have the mucho macho, but only fill it 5/8.
Kelsey Grammer going after piccolo, macho, mucho, and nervosa grande on Frasier there. We're talking about Seattle. Lots of callers. Spokane, Washington, just down the pike. Hannah's calling. Hi, Hannah. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a comment about Seattle, really. When I was in high school, all of my friends would want to move to Seattle. It seems like in Spokane, since we're the next largest city to Seattle in Washington, that we always wanted to move out, you know, somewhere when we got a little bit older in our mid-20s.
Yeah.
And it was always Seattle. More vibrant music, greater opportunities for museums or art and all this really fun stuff. But now as it's changed, it seems like all of my friends really have decided that Seattle is not as cool as they thought. I mean, we've visited there, traveled there most every year. And now it seems like everyone's kind of shifting down to Portland because there's a lot of things involving like cocaine with the younger group where, you know, we think cocaine is just something that happens in the 80s. But that's really popping up in Seattle a little bit more.
Well, okay, so competition down the coast. Let us pick that one up. All right, Knut, I'll bring it to you first. Seattle, the heat is off. It's all Portland now. Are you feeling the competition, Knut?
That's right. Well, Portlandia, you know, it's there's always been a competition somewhat, mostly, between Seattle and Portland as these two sort of alternative Northwest universes. And, you know, someone described the fact that if people from Seattle went to the moon and built a colony, it would the first thing they would build would be a union hall and a chamber of commerce, and Portland would put up a good government and nice schools.
okay,
you know, Seattle has this sort of robust commerce side, whereas Portland is sort of the Trustafarian enclave. I love that. I love that Portlandia characterization of Portland being the alternative universe where Al Gore won.
Right. They've got their own send-up dynamic going. And we've got a lot of people writing online here. Mike says you know, he's going way back. Just play Perry Como over and over. The bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle. Well, maybe. April says, I'd love to go back. One of those beautiful cities. Surrounding areas gorgeous. Love its cultures. Kartik Lakshmi says, very few cities have a snow-capped peak as part of their skyline. Maria, that wasn't enough for you or your character, Bernadette, upon arrival, that all that beauty.
I actually, when I was having a hard time adjusting, so many people I would meet and I would say, tell me what it is you like about Seattle so much, because I really wanted to like it. You know, I'd moved here. All my stuff was here. I really didn't feel like
moving. It's cool to like Seattle, right?
Yes. And a lot of people said to me, we have everything, the mountains and the water. And I thought, seriously, that's all you can do, mountains and water? I really didn't get it. And I've got to say that after 4 years of living here, these kind of natural charms do creep up on you. And, you know, the character in my book, Bernadette, really goes through a very similar kind of change, and is really, by the end, embracing these things that at first she makes a lot of fun of, such as the beauty of the mountains and the water. And there is something about this little gem of a city with the Olympic Mountains and the water, and it's really quite a feast for the eyes. And so I do think that it takes a while to kind of see its charms, I would say. It has to grow on you, as maybe all cities do. But this one certainly took a long time to grow on me.
You go all soft by the end of the book. You say, be darling. She's talking to her daughter. You're a child of the earth, the United States, Washington State, and Seattle. Those East Coast rich kids are a different breed, on the fast track to nowhere. Your friends in Seattle are downright Canadian in their niceness. None of you has a cell phone. The girls wear hoodies and big cotton underpants and walk around with tangled hair and smiling, adorned backpacks. Do you know how absolutely exotic it is that you haven't been corrupted by fashion and pop culture? Boy, she's gone Seattle in a big way there, John.
Absolutely.
Big cotton underpants, I don't know. John in Spokane, Washington. Another Spokane. You're on the air, John.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd just add to what Hannah, also from Spokane, was saying, that I used to live in Seattle. My wife lived in Seattle. We're now in Spokane. We've been here for about 14 years, and yes, Seattle has changed a bit. It's, you know, not the, cultural epicenter of, say, 1991 with all the bands breaking and all that.
Kurt Cobain and all the rest, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I do find it a little bit less friendly than, excuse me, I was just dashing up the stairs, than when we left. You know,
why do you think that might be, John, if that's the case? I don't know.
You know, and not to, because I'm not an anthropologist, I'm a food scientist, but I do remember looking at the Seattle Times in 1988 and looking at the ads for Egghead Software and Microsoft and Boeing, and they were sister ads for, say, the Boston Globe and all these different city newspapers, and I think there was an awful large influx of people from Chicago, Boston, New York City, and, you know, certainly not enough to, you know, really changed the entire complexion of all the zip codes of Seattle, but I think it did make a difference.
Ah, corruption by the great outside. Let us pick that one up. Knut, what do you say?
Well, I was going to say, if you decide to build a city's economy on, you know, by importing engineers and people who write software code, I don't know why you're looking for some place that would be socially functional.
yeah, who needs it? just to gin up the coffee maker. Did you feel that tapestry of, you know, people from across the country there, Maria? Surely lots and lots and lots have come to Seattle over these years. It's not all like Norwegians who moved there in 1810.
I was struck, I have to say, by the number of people who I met who were born here, went to school here, and stayed here. And I think that there is a smugness about this being the best place, the best city in the world, and why would we move, you know? And I don't know if it's defensiveness or smugness or whatever, but I think that's where kind of the mountains and the water thing comes in, is people say, we have everything. It's outdoorsy. We have culture. We have commerce. We're on the cutting edge of, you know, Costco, Amazon, Microsoft. Yeah, I mean, it's really Boeing, you know, it's unbelievable just the concentration of really cutting edge technology that's going on here, or just big corporations. And so I actually, that's what I was struck with, struck by, because I'd lived in Los Angeles and New York, which really, these are cities where everyone comes to. And I think that part of the unspoken understanding is that you go there and you're all thrown together and you make friends and all your friends are new. And that's part of, I think, the kind of unspoken contract of going into those cities. And I moved here, I will say, in my mid-40s, it's very different from moving into a city in your 20s. Yeah. You know, I already had a family. But I was actually struck in the opposite way by the number of people who really were longtime Seattleites. And I write about it in my book, about a woman saying, you know, where my house is now, within a 5-mile radius, my mother lived, my grandmother lived, my great grandmother lived. And that's a real snobbery that you get here, that it's, in fact, I write about a lot in my book, is about, we've been here longer than you, you're new, get out, especially if you're from L.A., really get out. Well, here's a one-way ticket.
Take,
you know,
off. Sayonara. Don't let the door hit you in the back on the way out, in the back side. I mean, Knut, they call it the Emerald City, and you raise this question of what, you know, with that reference, what does it mean? Is it Oz or is it Kansas?
That's right. I mean, Maria's book actually kind of deals with that in an interesting way, because on the one hand, it's sort of this woman who's found herself and her family in this land of munchkins. but then on the other hand, can it be that there's no place like home, you know, that it's a place that actually can kind of. And I think Seattle is really, there have been a number of novels out in the last year, and Maria's is one of them, that are dealing with the sort of Seattle history. And one of the questions that kind of keeps coming up in different forms is, have we been spoiled by success? Also, Seattle views itself as an exporter of culture, not an importer of culture. We import people, but we export culture. Mm-hmm. So you've got Amazon, Microsoft, Starbucks, grunge. Right. We love it when the rest of the world likes what we like and what we created. But, you know, if TGI Fridays or Walmart tries to open up in Seattle, you know, people go ape, you know, we're being invaded. So, but we love the sort of cultural imperialism of our quirky ways.
Everybody loves their own imperialism, right? I mean, to a point anyway. But the question I've heard you raise, Knut, is whether this whole sort of Oz, Kansas, you know, provincialism, prosperity, progressive politics all together, does it nurture the good life or self-absorption in Seattle's case?
Well, there's plenty of both. You know, I think there's plenty of self-absorption. There's plenty of smugness. but I think the fact is, for a lot of people, they moved here for a reason, and the reason was they wanted a better life. It's not the Oregon Trail, but because people are coming on Dreamliners, you know, but it really has that same element. People are coming here for a better life. Nature is part of it, and also the sense that Seattle is somehow, as flawed as it is, committed to creating some kind of balance in your life where work isn't everything. And that's, of course, a matter of, you know, cultural perspective. Some people see us. I once talked to an Irishman who worked on the Alaska pipeline who said, you know, we were working ourselves to death. You know?
Yeah, well, have fun. You mean in Seattle? Well, and Maria
said, I've never seen people work so hard in my life. He thought we were crazy. We didn't leave any time for life. You know, that was an Irishman's perspective. From the perspective of somebody from New York, we're lazy and we probably don't drink enough.
I don't know. Let's get a midway caller here. We got a lot on the line. Here's one from Boston. Mark is calling. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is Mark from Boston.
Hi.
And I would just like to talk about the perception of insiders versus outsiders in Seattle. And I have a personal story here, because I had just gotten to Seattle for the first time. I was just returning from a business trip to Asia. I spent a month in Singapore and Hong Kong.
Okay.
And then when I went to Seattle, back to my own country, I felt like more of a foreigner there than I did in Asia because I was heckled on the street.
Why?
I was wearing just normal business clothing. I was wearing a tie, nice polished shoes.
And no flannel?
No flannel, I know. See, there's my problem. I didn't you know, dress in Rome as the Romans did. But, I was just wandering down the street, and I was heckled there more than I have been basically anywhere else.
What about Seattle nice, that expression, that idea, Seattle nice, Mark?
As far as Seattle nice, I actually have another example from my brief time there.
Okay.
I was walking down the street. I was exploring, and I found out where this one restaurant was. And a carload of people pulled up, and they were asking me for that restaurant. And I said, I just happen to know where it is. And so they all turned to me and they looked at me with what seemed like forced smiles.
Yeah.
And they asked me to come with them to the restaurant. And me being from Boston, I thought they were instantly crazy. So I turned on my heel and walked away.
Oh.
And then I was mocked. Their niceness and their invite suddenly turned to derision. They're like, oh no, he doesn't want to join us. So I think that the notion of Seattle nice and the notion of, it conflicts with the notion of kind of like a bias against outsiders, and just like anywhere else in the world, you can't really stereotype people because fundamentally everybody around the world is just a little bit uncomfortable with people who aren't like them.
Well, we certainly know that story. Boston's got its own claim on that. Lots of places can, but John and Canute, help us here. Do a little cultural interpretation on Mark's marvelous visit to Seattle. What do you hear in his story, being heckled for wearing a coat and tie, or the invitation to the restaurant? Was that Seattle frost, or did he just bring his own frost? What are you hearing there, Canute? John?
I'm not really sure. I mean, the coat and tie thing is very funny. I went to a hippie college in Olympia, which is the state capital just south of Seattle.
Yeah.
And I happened to wear a tie one day and had a professor come up and scream in my face, "What do you mean by wearing that tie?" I clearly violated a Northwest code of some kind.
Seattle, Northwest in general, Northwest business attire especially is casual to a fault. Mm-hmm. I have another colleague I work with who's a Boston native that just took him years to come to terms with how casually everybody dresses up here.
Maria, what do you say?
Well, when I came up here, from Los Angeles and also after spending time in New York, something that was disconcerting at first was how totally anonymous everybody likes to be. It's a very anonymous place. There's no flashy cars, no flashy clothes, and there's just almost kind of the value systems as expressed in your clothes and in your possessions really in other countries are really shunned here in Seattle. And
is
it's
that a
kind
great
of a
thing, of
yes,
equality, and I don't know.
Ultimately, well, for me, who prided myself on my nice clothes,
put them away.
At first it was hard. At first it was very hard because I didn't realize until I came up here how much of the cities that I'd lived in were kind of the hierarchy, that people kind of wear their own self-hierarchy in their clothes and in their cars. And here there's none of that. So I think it's beautiful. Now that I'm here, I'm totally embracing it. Saw what I was wearing now. You would never believe I ever owned a nice pair of clothing.
You're all Seattle now. Maria Semple's new book is Where'd You Go, Bernadette? It's getting raves. A little grunge behind us here. Soundgarden from back in 94. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the culture and foibles of Seattle, the Emerald City, Oz, capital of the Great Northwest, and target of some tough and funny jibes in the new comic novel by Martha Semple. She's with us. It is Where'd You Go, Bernadette? There's a nice excerpt at our website, onpointradio.com.
boston.org. She joins us from Seattle, came up from California, and it kind of whacked her in the face. She shares it in a really funny style in the new book. Knut Berger is with us as well today. He is editor-at-large and columnist at Seattle Magazine, author of The Space Needle and Pugetopolis. John Stone is here, executive director of Seattle's annual Bumbershoot Music and Arts Festival. Maria, Knut, John, stand by. With us right now, another Seattleite who's out of town today, but the great Dan Savage joins us. He writes the syndicated sex advice column Savage Love, editorial director of Seattle's alternative weekly The Stranger. He started the It Gets Better project in response to suicides of teens who were bullied because they were gay. Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of Maria's rant on Seattle?
I think it's spot on. I think Seattle is very insular and can be very closed and myopic and has a culture that can be very sort of, you know, everyone's the same. It has a certain you know, Xerox quality to the city, from neighbor to neighborhood, house to house, person to person, value to value. It can be very stultifying.
But we thought it was super cool and coffee charged and all revved up on tech you know, the glories of nature plus, software.
I think you're confusing Seattle with Portland.
Oh, wait a minute. You've been there a while now. Have you broken through like Maria and said, oh, no, my first impression was all wrong, Seattle rocks?
You know, I've lived there for 20 years, and I still feel like a bit of an outsider. You know, when I first moved to Seattle, and I moved there to start writing my column for The Stranger, and I'd never lived there, and I sort of fell into this job and wound up moving to Seattle. I didn't pick Seattle. I just kind of drifted into Seattle and expected to stay for a year or two and then move back to Europe where I had been living. And when I first moved there, I would ask people, what do you like about Seattle? What's good about Seattle? And invariably, people would say, the mountains are gorgeous. The mountains aren't in Seattle. You can see the mountains from Seattle. It's like standing in Manhattan asking somebody what they love about New York, and they say New Jersey is beautiful.
Come on, doesn't
it? It wasn't until I actually took up snowboarding as a sport because of my son, who was a snowboarder at age 7, and began going to the mountains. Then I drank the Kool-Aid. Now I'm one of the mountains are beautiful zombies. Who, when I'm asked what I love about Seattle, I start talking about things that aren't actually in Seattle, like the mountains.
Hey, but we notice it's 20 years and you're still there, Dan.
Yeah, that's because I got married and I had a kid and I got stuck, I got a great job at The Stranger and it took off. And, you know, that's how life works. Sometimes you get, you grow roots you didn't intend to grow in a place you didn't intend to grow them.
Seattle guys, Knut, John, are you going to pull his visa 20 years and he's still thinking like that?
No, not at all. He's part of the fabric now. You know, what he was saying about seeing the mountains, you know, it goes back to the idea that Seattle is, for a lot of Seattleites, Seattle is like a base camp. And you'll notice that people always wear hiking boots. I'm wearing hiking boots. I'm not hiking anywhere, but I'm wearing hiking boots. If I went to the opera, I'd probably wear hiking boots. And there's always this feeling that you're about to be called to do a mountain rescue. You know, you've got to be prepared.
Yes.
You've got your North Face
any
on.
Any minute now.
You know,
yeah.
I've said that since I moved there, that the one thing, you know, I'm gay, but I don't have the gay fashion gene. I can barely dress myself. My husband buys my clothes. He lays them out Granimal style so I don't wear the wrong things together. the one thing I've always really appreciated about Seattle as opposed to New York, and I spent a lot of time in New York, is nobody cares what you're wearing. Whereas in New York, I'm self-conscious about my socks and underwear that people can't see. I get insecure.
Coordinate,
Seattle,
man.
You can wear whatever you want, wherever you want. No one cares, and I actually really appreciate
Dan,
that.
What about the Microsoft factor, Dan? I mean, it has been such a huge thing. It's not the only huge thing now. Maria's character calls it Big Brother, kind of looming over everything. How do you look at it after all these years?
I live in the city itself. I think Microsoft has a much bigger footprint if you're out in Renton or the Burbs or on one of the, you know, commuter millionaire billionaire home islands.
Yeah.
I've always lived in downtown Seattle and Capitol Hill or Belltown, a brief sojourn on an island myself on Vashon. But Microsoft is much less oppressive a presence, I think, in the middle of the city than it is in the donut that surrounds the city.
Maria, what about that? Is that just out in Zillionaire Row where you see the footprint?
The reason why I included Microsoft in the book is because when I first moved here, and I was starting to write this character of Bernadette, and I wanted her to be married and have her husband have some kind of job, and I thought it would be a tech job. And at the time, we'd enrolled her in a private school, and in the parent handbook, I just noticed that almost half of the parent email addresses were at Microsoft.com. And so I started kind of asking around. At first, I thought it was just like Yahoo.com or something. Like I was, I thought all these people can't really be working at Microsoft. And then they were, you know, both parents of kids were working at Microsoft and a lot of them were working from home. And so I really wanted to write something that was authentic. And I thought, well, this seems to be what's going on here is a lot of people work at Microsoft. And so that's why I made that choice.
And it's not just an employer. It's a kind of culture or value system. I mean, the girl's father, Bernadette's husband, is sort of famous in town because he gave a great TED talk. I love that. That's his big, claim to fame.
Yes, and there are a lot of big rock stars over at Microsoft. You know, I went there to do some research. I met a couple of really high-level engineers, and I was really kind of surprised and delighted by the culture there, where they do have nobody that any of us would ever heard of. But, you know, it's a little kind of Kool-Aid drinking community within the larger Kool-Aid drinking community, and that everyone there just gets very breathless about these, you know, high-level engineers and things. And so I just thought that was a funny thing to write about and try to capture.
We've got very knowing listeners from around the country here. Salome writes, says, I live in West Seattle. I've been here 4 years and still don't know any of my neighbors. I recently had a baby, so a couple of neighbors said hi to me with the baby. Also, when I first moved to Seattle, someone at the bank called me a colored person. I'm Caucasian, Salome writes, but I'm brunette with a little bit of olive skin. Colored person? Yes, in Seattle, she says, I would be classified as that. Canute, what do you say?
Well, from a racial standpoint, Seattle has always been very insular. I mean, it's more diverse now than it's ever been. But we're one of the most segregated cities in the United States back in the 60s. And there were huge fights about busing and open housing and integration. We believed that there was this sort of idealism that white people here, which were 96-97% white, had, that race didn't exist. Well, it didn't.
Hello. Right.
Yeah. And so that is a quality of Seattle, and a lot of people of color who move here are really, I think, shocked at the sort of cluelessness about race that many people here have. They're sort of right when it comes to the politics of race and how they vote or something like that, but they really have a problem just in the public sphere.
Hey, we're not throwing stones. We're just looking in here. Dan?
Well, sometimes we desperately overcompensate. King County is the name of the county that Seattle is in. It has an African-American King County executive. You know, a lot of racial minorities do well politically. There's no evidence that people vote against people because of their race. But this kind of comic overcompensation, we renamed King County for Martin Luther King. It had been named for some jerko 19th century vice president, but we renamed it for Martin Luther King. So
right.
we don't have a problem with race. Look, we have an African-American King County executive, and we renamed King County for Martin Luther King. And that kind of sometimes desperate pandering over compensation, I think, is as characteristic of Seattle as the segregation and the cluelessness and the casual racism that you do encounter in the city, and casual anti-Semitism, too.
Here's Laura. Says, hey, you know, people know about all kinds of places. She says, you want to talk about the Native attitude? Colorado, Laura writes, takes the cake regarding Native attitude here first. LZ in Cambridge, Massachusetts. LZ, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm fascinated with your guests today. Having grown up in the 80s and 90s with a set of college and high school friends in Seattle who just would wax lyrical about the city, I could completely relate to all of your guests saying, you know, there's this certain a certain pridefulness that Seattleites have of saying their city is the best. And yet I had to get away from it. I really craved kind of a faster pace of East Coast living. And I really wanted a more urban mix, a more diverse community. The Seattle I grew up in was about 87% Caucasian. And it was interesting to see, while so many people are just trying to create it within their cities what Seattle has, create that wonderful mix of bike lanes and, you know, hip public art and great coffee shops. You know, there's still that tension between some wonderful urban communities we have over here on the East Coast that you just don't quite see over there.
Well, all right. So there's sort of a bunch of sides of it. LZ, thanks for that report. Boy, we've got all kinds of profiles on that score. Nashville, Tennessee, Sepia is calling. Sepia, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was given a call because I was born and raised in Seattle in 1962. And, oh, yes, I am a black woman.
Okay.
But the racial aspect.
All right.
And I was born and raised in West Seattle. So yay for West Seattle.
All right.
And I was kind of laughing because I moved to Nashville 5 years ago. And I would get people after I tell them I'm from Seattle to say, oh, you're one of those. Or, oh, that's what makes you different. Because, yes, I do have long gray hair. And,
and why not?
Because I happen to love it. But yeah. The funny thing is I went back for the big Space Needle, shindig, which, of course, the World's Fair was there, took my 14-year-old daughter, Wisdom, back just in May, and she says, oh, my God, Mother, what kind of place is this? And I'm like, well, this is the Queen City, because it was called Queen City before Emerald City.
Yeah.
And so I said, this is a Queen City, so, you know, you're going to love it. She says, well, so far I haven't found anything. It's dreary. And she was going on, and the people didn't seem to be friendly. We'd only been there 10 days. All of my family is still, my mother, everybody's siblings are still in Seattle. So it's kind of funny to hear Wisdom, my 14-year-old, say that, because I told her, this is not the Seattle that I was born and raised in. And I said, but what happens is you do have to find your tribe. And I opened up the Wellington Tea Room. Dan Savage came in. I remember when the stranger came, I carried the stranger in the Wellington.
Yeah.
Did a lot of fun things for, you know, the community, and basically bringing writers and, you know, Dan Greenblatt, Colette Collins, a lot of different people coming in with of like-mindedness, music and so forth. And yes, we did have flannel shirts and, you know, a couple of mountain boots, but it was all good.
Hey, CP, you're the real deal. I'm so glad you called from Nashville, and I wonder how your daughter Wisdom will think of it down the road. I mean, Dan, you've got to give the place credit. It has been a cultural generator locally and for the whole country, world.
It has. You know, there is something. What I've always said about Seattle, like as an art scene or a lit scene, is it's big enough that it matters to make something happen in Seattle, and small enough that the barriers to entry to making something happen in Seattle are much lower than in other cities. But, you know, we don't have a mass transit system. The pace of life is very slow. Until like the last 10-12 years, when the food scene took off, there really wasn't a great food scene. Seattle, you know, since I moved there, has had this world-class city conflict about whether it wants to be a world-class city, whether it wants to be an urban center, or whether it wants to be a city that is still zoned single-family housing for 70-80% of the entire city. Seattle seems to want to, you know, be a big city and never ever get around to paying the dues of being a big city, which means building a big city infrastructure and having a more big city pace and attitude.
Yeah, we know people's mixed feelings about all that. Zach in Lexington, Kentucky, you're on the air. Zach, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I read excerpts of her book, and I found it spot on, like a previous caller said. And I've raised four children in the city of Seattle on Queen Anne. And several years ago, my wife and I moved to Lexington, and one of the things that we just absolutely love to do and say is, to anybody asks it, where are we from? First thing we say is, we're from Seattle. In fact, we both still have our Washington State driver's licenses. And I don't know if it's a characteristic of living in the city for a long period of time, but you just can't get it out of your soul. It stays there even if you're in a wonderful new place like we are here in Lexington. And in fact, one of my sons just started at the University of Kentucky, and yesterday the first thing he said to me was, I don't miss Seattle at all.
So what do you say to Maria Simple? You've read some of her, Zach. Do you understand her kind of the arc of her relationship from, you know, California skepticism to, I mean, by the end of this book, she's got her characters downright mushy over Seattle.
Well, I think Seattle grows on you. I came to Seattle from New York, and the first thing I said is, people don't walk quick enough, and geez, why do you talk so fast? I've also noticed that when I go to Mariners games, particularly when they play Boston, there seems to be more Boston fans in the stands, and that used to drive me crazy. You're here in the city, and why aren't you wearing this pride? But we take it with us. It stays in our blood. I just recently met with the mayor of Lexington, and I told him where I was from, and I said, please don't make Lexington like Seattle. And he looked at me with a quizzical look, because I think a lot of people want to be like Seattle.
Yeah, why not? So beautiful. Economy's not too bad.
But it isn't the Seattle that I grew up in. And I think Dan's comments are incredibly accurate. And I really, I've always enjoyed his writings. And I miss it, but this is a lot of fun down here. It couldn't be more different. And
hey, Zach, kick your heels up there in Lexington. We're glad you called. Maria Semple, where do you go with Seattle then? Are you a nomad? Will you be there for another, 18 months and then off to your next city to have fun with? Or is the moss growing up around you, Maria?
The moss is growing up around me. I really find that it's kind of gotten into my soul, as the previous caller said. And in fact, I just was in New York and flew back a couple days ago. And I kind of knew it was home when I was flying over the mountains and I saw Vashon Island, where we also have a house, and looking down the airplane, and just it was again from the sky seeing the mountains and the water, and I just started tearing up, and felt like I'm home. This is now, it's just totally gotten to me, and there's something about it that does get inside your system, and now I could never imagine living anywhere else.
Where'd you go, Bernadette, is Maria Semple's very funny new book. Dan Savage, Seattle, what is it, America's future, America's past?
It's America's sister that moved to another city. It's your goopy, pot-growing sister.
All right. Sister from another city. We love you all the same. It's been great to have you all with us. Dan Savage with The Stranger. Thanks for joining us today, Dan.
Thank you.
John Stone with Bumbershoot. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.
Knut Berger with Seattle Magazine. Wonderful to have you here, Knut.
You bet.
And Maria Semple, thanks for joining us. Here's Perry Como, 1969, Seattle. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
And the hills, the greenest green in Seattle, like a beautiful child growing up, free and wild, full of hopes and full of dreams, full of laughter, full of tears, full of dreams to last the years in Seattle. In Seattle, in Seattle.